Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm John Schumann with Medical Monday. Recently, there was some noteworthy celebrity news which you may not have heard about. Model and TV personality Chrissy Teigen gave birth to a stillborn child. This event was not noteworthy because it happened. Pregnancy loss happens far more than is commonly known. Teigen's loss was noteworthy because she was so public about it, sharing photographs of herself on social media and eventually writing a soul-searching essay about her experiences. In so doing, someone with her huge fan following defied the norm of staying quiet and ashamed about something that is unfortunately a natural part of life, as much as we are loath to admit it. Women who experience perinatal loss, as it's known, grieve in every way you can imagine, from moving forward to try and achieve a healthy pregnancy and birth, to deciding to forego the risks, and sometimes anguish, of future childbearing. What's not helpful is pretending these losses don't occur, or telling someone that has experienced loss that it was meant to be, or making comments like, "Don't worry, you'll have another baby." My guest today, Joey Miller, is a therapist and expert in reproductive psychology, perinatal loss, and women's mental health. Formerly the program coordinator for the perinatal loss program at Prentice Women's Hospital of Northwestern University in Chicago, Miller has just written a new book called Rebirth, The Journey of Pregnancy After a Loss. Miller has a background in social work and is now part of a private practice in Chicago called Wellsprings Health Associates. Therapist and author Joey Miller is my guest today on Studio Tulsa Medical Monday. Joey Miller, welcome to Medical Monday. I'd like to start by just having you define what is meant by perinatal loss.
Perinatal loss is a very broad and encompassing term that refers to the loss of a pregnancy or the death of a baby at any point during pregnancy, whether that's the first, second, third trimester, during delivery, the early postpartum period, or infancy. And so we broadly and very generally refer to that as any time there is a loss surrounding pregnancy.
Right. So I think a lot of us have conceptions that a miscarriage might mean one thing versus a perinatal loss or a stillbirth. And I mean, these are in some ways archaic terms, are they not?
Yes. There are so many different terms that are used, and I really try to encourage people away from specific terms that they may or may not relate to, that many of these terms have an understanding that may or may not be medically accurate by society's understanding of that. So, for example, when we talk about miscarriage, that generally refers to the loss of a pregnancy or the death of a baby prior to 20 weeks gestation. And many in society believe that that's only a loss that occurs during the first trimester. And so there can be different weights assigned to the losses, with some erroneously believing that a loss at 6 weeks maybe isn't quite as profound as a loss at 20 weeks, for example. And I always counsel my patients that the depth of grief or the reaction to the loss is much more a reflection of the depth of the attachment than necessarily the length of gestation. And so when we professionally use the term perinatal loss or pregnancy and infant loss, for many women, that's much more validating than a term, for example, miscarriage, that might be somewhat minimized by society.
Yeah, that was a very well done explanation. Well, I wonder what I learned from your book, and it had been a while since I perhaps even knew any of these statistics way back from medical school, is that perinatal loss is probably more common than most people think. I mean, it seems surprisingly so, I guess. So can you share with us some of those numbers?
Sure. You know, the statistics can be really, really overwhelming. In the United States alone, there are an estimated 2.2 million pregnancies that end in loss annually. That's 2.2 million. And when we look at these numbers globally, they only further explode. The World Health Organization suggests that there are over 6.3 million perinatal deaths a year worldwide, and an additional 4.1 million infant deaths, which is defined as the death of a baby prior to 1 year of age. And so, you know, over 10 million women and their partners and or families are impacted by these losses worldwide every single year. So this is very prevalent, even though the overwhelming majority of women do have healthy pregnancies. Unfortunately, many do not.
Yeah, and I also read where I think it's something like 15% of pregnancies will spontaneously abort or miscarry in the first trimester, and then I guess 1 out of 100 pregnancies at beyond 20 weeks. Does that coincide with what you have researched?
Correct. There's a lot of controversy and disagreement within the medical community about the risk for miscarriage, and I've seen anywhere between 10 and 20% of known pregnancies that are believed to end in miscarriage. But the reality is that many of these numbers are underreported because women aren't always seeking care. And if they don't require a surgical intervention, sometimes the statistics are not reflective of the actual numbers. And yes, that is correct. Approximately 1 in 100 pregnancies will end in stillbirth, which is defined as loss after 20 weeks gestation. And in the United States alone, that's about 24,000 deaths annually.
Wow. One of the other things that I learned from your book is that there are just an enormous spectrum of ways that women and families will grieve a lost pregnancy or perinatal loss. And one of the things that I wanted to ask you specifically about, because it's a fear that I think many women will have after the loss of a pregnancy, is that if they try to achieve a subsequent pregnancy, that they may also lose that pregnancy. And there is a subset of people for whom they do seem to have this as a medical problem, and it goes by the term recurrent pregnancy loss. And I just wondered if you could share with us details about when that occurs or what we know about recurrent pregnancy loss.
Yes, this is also a very real challenge for many women. And anyone who has lost a pregnancy or a baby has quickly learned all too well that pregnancy is not a promise. And so after that experience of loss, when a woman has felt like she's been that one in a million or she's been struck by lightning, that recurrence risks, you know, even though an obstetric provider may counsel that woman, we don't believe that this would happen again, that was horrible luck, or that was random, her experience has taught her otherwise. And so for many women who are considering a subsequent pregnancy after a loss, what we might believe as possible, you know, that she could possibly have another loss, in her mind has shifted to probable. Her experience has taught her that bad things can and do happen, and not just to other people. It's now happened to me. And so especially in the case of recurrent pregnancy loss, I once had a patient who shared with me, she said, I always feel like I'm circling the drain, right? Because she could get pregnant, but she couldn't get beyond the first trimester until she had medical assistance and ended up going through in vitro fertilization or IVF. So especially for the subset of women who experience RPL or recurrent pregnancy loss, their worst fears have been reinforced over and over and over again, and that's magnified their sense of vulnerability and caution.
You're listening to Studio Tulsa. It's Medical Monday. I'm John Schumann. My guest today is Joey Miller, who is a social worker and a therapist, an expert in loss and trauma, in reproductive psychology, and in women's mental health. And her new book is called Rebirth, The Journey of Pregnancy After a Loss. And you can also read more about Joey at her self-titled website, joeymillermsw.com, where you can learn more about her work and her book. And Joey, one thing you did in this book that I thought made it particularly poignant, even though it's a difficult topic, is that you have the voices of about 24 women throughout the book talking about their emotional responses and their thoughts in regard to perinatal loss. And I guess, well, would you just share with us how you came to select those women, or, you know, how their stories came to the fore in terms of even like getting their permission or whether you use the real names or things like that?
Sure. So over the last 20 years, I've been focused on providing individual and couples therapy in Chicago. And over the last 20 years, I've worked with thousands and thousands and thousands of women and couples who have experienced the loss of a pregnancy or the death of a baby. And this book really was a natural extension of my work with patients, many of whom would journal and write down their thoughts and their feelings, sometimes in between sessions. And I found that their stories really captured my attention and my heart. And I felt that many of these women historically have been suffering in silence because we don't talk about pregnancy and infant loss as a whole in society because society is already very uncomfortable with the topic of grief. And so I wanted the world to hear and see some of their stories. And so 25 of my patients made contributions to this book where they included narratives, parts and pieces of their story. And of the 25 included, the majority of women chose to use their real first names. There are a few that have been changed just to protect their privacy, but every single word is true.
Yeah, and there really are just so many that it's almost impossible to choose. But I was wondering if you could read Leah's statement that's on page 119 of your book, because I just thought it illustrated so many of the responses. And now this is, I should set the context for this. This is in a chapter called The First Trimester. So this is advice that you're giving to women who are trying, who have achieved pregnancy and are in the very nerve-wracking first trimester of a pregnancy after having experienced loss. And I guess, could you read for us what Leah wrote?
Sure. And just one more comment prior to reading that. So many women struggle with the grief surrounding the loss of their pregnancy or death of their baby, but they also oftentimes experience a pretty severe injury to their sense of identity, their sense of confidence, their sense of control in the world, that even the words we use when we're pregnant, I'm expecting, you know, suggest that yes, we are anticipating happily ever after and a healthy full-term birth of a baby. And when that dream is shattered, you know, the confidence, the sense of identity, and a sense of control in the world is gone. And my patient, Leah, wrote about this loss of control. She writes, "During this time, my house became cleaner and more organized than it has ever been. I alphabetized everything, and there was not one single thing that did not have an exact place or home. I color-coded the clothes in the closets and our towels in the cabinets. I drove my husband out of his mind, chasing him around the house when he'd come home from work, begging him not to undo what I had worked so hard to do. I had to have everything just so. He asked me why this kind of stuff matters, if it matters, especially the night I lost my shit when he cooked for me and he put the salt back next to the pepper instead of the tarragon. That was the moment I realized I was the one out of my mind. I felt so out of control inside, and I was trying to make up for it by trying to control everything else, including my husband. Pro tip, that doesn't work and didn't get me anywhere."
Thank you for reading that, Joey. And I just thought it's so well illustrated, your patient Leah, how she, as you pointed out, was striving to achieve some sort of control in a world in which she felt like so much was out of her control. And you've alluded to this, but what your book also taught me is that, you know, the two dozen patients that you feature in the book, but also you said thousands of patients over many, many years in this career, the spectrum of responses to grief are just absolutely across the board, right? I mean, from some wanting to just plow right ahead into another pregnancy and kind of keep going on the clock and spacing having either a child or more children, to, you know, outright total grief and, you know, PTSD or acute stress response, those kinds of things. And it's totally, I think, based on your experience, it sounds like it's unpredictable as to how people will respond.
I think it's completely unpredictable, and it's also not linear. That many in society have heard of this stages of grief model, where when something bad happens, that we go through these different phases, and then at the end, there's something suggested as acceptance or closure. And in my work, I find that that word really has no place, that these women's lives are forever changed by their losses, and they experience them so individually that I have yet to see two people respond in identical fashions. And it, again, is based on the depth of their attachment and the meaning of the relationship to them, which is unique for every single couple. And so I always counsel family members and friends that instead of trying to provide support with an interpretive or a suggestive response, such as, you know, you're young, you can have another baby, which is, sidebar, a guarantee that we never should or can offer anybody, But instead of trying to color that by our own experience or what we think someone might be feeling, simply saying, I'm so sorry, oftentimes goes a lot farther, just because we can't predict what someone is going to be feeling. And some patients and women want to talk, and some need more privacy. And so it's, again, highly individual and not predictable what someone's reaction is necessarily going to be.
Yeah, you gave a good example there of when people say things that they think are helpful, and you have a couple of pages of those kinds of sayings, but also how to, as you call it, politely but directly respond when triggered. And I thought I would just read a couple of these sort of typical responses that people unfortunately hear, and then you could share with us suggested responses. Here's one that I think is particularly challenging no matter what the stressful situation is, but someone telling a woman who's had a perinatal loss, you just have to relax and it'll happen.
Yes. And I think, again, that speaks to support members, or whether that's family or friends, really wanting this for a couple. But the reality is that for many of these women, it's not about relaxing. That sometimes there is a medical, you know, condition or situation that makes conception not straightforward. And with regard to some of the suggested responses, I offer this. Perhaps considering something like this, even if I was able to feel relaxed for a time, my reality is the stress is going to continue and will actually increase after conception. That is a lingering part of the trauma I have experienced. I can't ask you to understand. I'm just asking that you try.
Yeah, I like the way you frame it so much better. I'll just toss one more at you that I think people are, you know, understandably, again, trying to contextualize something that's very difficult to talk about. But here's the saying, my friend's daughter had a miscarriage and now she's pregnant again.
Yes. And again, that goes against the fact that grief is experienced as so highly individual. And with that type of a statement, even though it's so well-intentioned and meant to be comforting, oftentimes it's very off-putting and even offensive for the bereaved woman. And what I suggest women say is, I'm sorry for her loss, but her situation has nothing to do with mine. Sharing that only reminds me that bad things happen. I'm already focused on my own medical situation, so it's not helpful to keep hearing about others. It's more helpful to have you ask and then listen to how I'm doing.
Joey, I have a question about the field of loss and trauma, or specifically about perinatal loss, which is, you know, how common is it if a woman experiences a perinatal loss that she's referred to therapy? I mean, I think people in Chicagoland are lucky to have you or colleagues like you as a resource, but are there sort of enough of therapists like you to go around?
You know, that's a great question. Given my profession, I am encouraging of more people into therapy. And unfortunately, historically, there have been a lot of barriers to people seeking treatment and or being referred, that sometimes there are geographic barriers. I live in Chicago. It's a major metropolitan center. Not everyone has access to specialty providers, which is one of the reasons why I wanted to write this book, to help extend information independent, you know, or outside of Chicago. But sometimes there are cultural barriers, there can be stigma, there can be financial restrictions that maybe people can't afford, you know, private therapy or treatment. And so I'm finding that with increased awareness and education, more and more providers are referring their patients. But we still have a long ways to go. And just a note on that many times support groups are suggested for these patients. And in my experience, while some can be helpful and really help provide a sense of community for women and their partners, for many couples, it's not helpful. And it can be very triggering to connect with other couples and hear about all of the other bad things that happened when they're already feeling vulnerable. And so support groups can be a hit or miss for people. And that's just for me to push all the more for individual therapy to help protect some of these women and their partners from some of the outside triggers as we continue to focus on their own and help them work to heal.
You're listening to Studio Tulsa. It's Medical Monday. I'm John Schumann. My guest today is therapist, social worker by training, and author Joey Miller, who is the author of the new book, Rebirth, The Journey of Pregnancy After a Loss. Joey Miller is a therapist in Chicago who specializes in women's mental health, loss and trauma, and reproductive psychology. And Joey, there was an interesting news item recently of someone I wasn't that familiar with, but my kids certainly know, by the name of Chrissy Teigen. And I don't know how, I know you have a bunch of kids, I don't know how old they are, but if they follow her on social media. But Chrissy Teigen has two children and had, I guess, a third pregnancy, and it didn't go well. She had a complication called a partial placental abruption, which basically means her placenta was partially detached from the uterine wall, and it led to constant bleeding, which was a huge risk for the fetus and for her, and ultimately resulted in her having to give birth to this child before it was viable. And what was fascinating was she was very public about this, posting photographs on her social media, and then wrote a very brilliant, heartfelt essay about her grief. And I guess I just wanted to know if you'd seen this or what your thoughts about it are.
I have, and my heart just goes out to them because I can certainly appreciate their grief reactions given the work that I do every day. And in the same breath, my reaction was extreme gratitude surrounding their generosity in sharing such a private and personal loss publicly and finally beginning the conversation on a much more public level and giving a voice to women who haven't been able to use theirs for various reasons, and specifically bringing attention to this idea of infant memorial photography. I'm aware she's offended many people who have said, you know, why would you ever post that online? And my email and my cell phone have been exploding with messages saying, I'm so glad she did that. I'm so glad that they are more public. These are the only photos we have as well. And for many families, the recognition is that, you know, when an adult dies, we're comforted by all of these, you know, years and years of memories and shared anniversaries and holidays spent together. And when a baby dies, it is the loss of everything future, but it's also the loss of everything past. And so these photographs and these images take on even more meaning for women and for their partners.
Yeah, and the New York Times, among other news sources, did a very nice write-up, I guess, of her situation, and then the blog post that she posted on a website called Medium, which you can easily find through a web search. And Joey, you know, this brings up the topic of the sort of the public service. She, and you talked about them, you're talking too about her husband, which if people don't know is the incredibly talented musician John Legend. And so they have tried in a way, or maybe unintentionally, just by being public, because they are both public figures, in reducing the shame and stigma associated with perinatal loss. I mean, I don't really know of other public figures like this in history. Are there other examples of this?
There are other very visible public figures who have talked about loss. For example, Michelle Obama was vocal about her prior miscarriage in her book. Meghan McCain was very public about her loss prior to having a subsequent child. But I found that with regard to this most recent loss with Chrissy Teigen and John Legend, she is a much more visible persona in different ways. And she's continued the conversation, you know, posting this several pages long essay where she's, you know, documenting and detailing her experience and also sharing photographs. And I think that's one of the big differences and distinctions here. That impact, you know, even just one photo on Instagram has been incredibly powerful worldwide, arguably.
Well, an image is always worth probably more than 1,000 words. Joey, I'm also curious about your sort of personal career trajectory. How did you wind up getting to specialize in loss and trauma and then develop such a specialization, if you will, in perinatal loss?
Sure. I began when I was getting my master's degree in social work. I did an internship and was working in the areas of emergency medicine and adult trauma at a level one trauma center. I spent considerable time moonlighting in the emergency room and in the trauma bays, and did a lot of crisis counseling, crisis intervention, and counseling surrounding very profound, significant, life-changing injuries, and oftentimes fatal injuries. And after I had worked in that area for years, I was recruited by Northwestern Memorial Hospital in Chicago as well to focus at the other end of the lifespan, focusing on women and their partners who experienced the loss of a baby or the death of a child, and worked to build an entire perinatal loss program at the hospital prior to going into private practice. So I continue to cover grief and loss and trauma throughout the lifespan, but that training really helped well equip me to deal with some of the crisis intervention and fatalities that occur, unfortunately, at the beginning of the lifespan.
Well, I can't go asking any kind of healthcare provider without the theme of the moment, which, of course, for the last half of a year or more has been COVID-19. And I learned from you earlier that you're doing all of your therapy visits online at this point. But I moreover wondered if you could make a comment about women's care in general, or what I'm talking about specifically is pregnancy care. Because with all of the restrictions in place in healthcare facilities like hospitals, and I know you're not working in the hospital now, but if you just, from where you sit, if you had a comment about women and the experience of pregnancy and childbirth during the COVID-19 pandemic, and what you or your colleagues are seeing in terms of, whether it's stress response or infections or what have you.
I'm in very, very close contact with many of my obstetric colleagues. So even though I'm not based in the hospital, we're all working very closely together. And the message that I think we've all been saying over and over and over again is that, unfortunately, COVID has made everything more difficult. And so for women who have been traumatized, who are struggling with anxiety and fear and depression, who dare to try again and conceive, or even women who have never had a loss before and are pregnant, because of safety concerns and recommended restrictions, many of their partners are not allowed to attend their prenatal appointments with them. And so even feeling the normalcy of a co-partner sitting next to you for an ultrasound or for an obstetric appointment, that has also been taken away from these patients. And so I think that the fears have been greater, the vulnerabilities exacerbated, but yet there is this message of hope that people are going on to conceive and carry and deliver healthy term pregnancies, and they can go on to find happiness and joy and safety, but it takes very conscientious and thoughtful work to navigate through another pregnancy.
Well, the name of the book is Rebirth, The Journey of Pregnancy After a Loss, and it's written by my guest today, Joey Miller, who is a therapist and social worker in Chicago who specializes in women's mental health, reproductive psychology, and loss and trauma. And Joey, congratulations on your book. It's really a wonderful work. I can see just how much effort and experience and heartfelt emotional research, frankly, went into the production of this book. And I think it'll be an absolute must inclusion in the library of mothers and mothers-to-be pretty much everywhere. It's really an incredible tool. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you. It's been my great pleasure, and I'm so grateful for the awareness you've raised.
Joey Miller is a therapist and expert in perinatal loss. Her new book is Rebirth, The Journey of Pregnancy After a Loss. Well, that's our show for this Medical Monday. Studio Tulsa is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect those of KWGS or the University of Tulsa. For Studio Tulsa, I'm John Schumann with Medical Monday. Thanks for listening, and please stay safe out there.